Blog Talk Radio.
Flash the war room.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez.
What up?
Kim. Jimmy. PJ. B. Austin. The hot block commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hours show and keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Move with the topic. Sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up out there, good people? It's Thursday, May 10th, 2012, and we'd like to welcome you back to the roundtable. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and alongside me at the table are the sports guys Jimmy Williams, P. Austin in the War Wagon, and Akil Bayon. Tonight, we'll catch you up on some hot topics from the week, of course, the NBA playoffs, and we'll be talking to boxer Ty Barnett as he prepares for his fight Saturday in his hometown of Washington, D.C. As usual, we want to hear from you guys tonight, so jump into the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call in and talk to us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we get started, we'd be remiss if we didn't spread the love to some of our favorite sports shows on the internet. Make sure you check out Roy and Chris of the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow those guys on Twitter at the BS Line. Also, check out Brandon and Chris on Sports Trap Radio every Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on ueradiolive.com. Follow them guys as well. Follow those guys as well. Excuse my English. At Sports Trap Radio on Twitter. Check out our Chicago fam of Ranked Top 5 Sports Talk Radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Blog Talk Radio. And finally, you must check out the best basketball show on the net from a ladies' perspective. Hoop Girls Radio has that on lock every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Jimmy and I had the pleasure of visiting the show on Tuesday, and we had a ball talking NBA playoffs. So shout out to Shell, Kia, Reese, and Ben, the people's male voice of reason. We definitely have to get together again real soon, so look out for us to welcome the Hoop Girls into the War Room. If you love good sports talk, then check out our radio family when you get a chance. So, yo, Jim, who's celebrating a birthday today?
Let's have it. Let's get right into it. We got some, you know what I mean, get right into these birthdays. And by the way, for those who are listening for the first time, birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon, which is located at 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. Go ask for Lisa. Some of you young ladies are walking around looking like baboons without your hair done. We can't have that.
Dang!
But anyway, let's jump right into the birthdays. First birthday is one Jerome Williams, who turns 39. Jeff, when I say Jerome Williams, yeah, happy birthday to you. When I say Jerome Williams, Jeff, what's up?
I think of JYD, the Junkyard Dog. You know, he was a scrappy NBA player straight out of Georgetown, straight out of D.C. He, like Reggie Miller, never took advantage of the NBA's dental plan, but he was a hard-working player. That's my man, the JYD. What else?
JYD. Yo, it's funny. When I think of this young man, I think of the slam dunk contest because for some reason when he was in the league, he was front and center at every dunk contest going honey-baked ham on every dunk, even the horrible ones. But, you know, shout out to him. He was a big slam dunk fan, I take it. So
he could have used that time because he was never an all-star, so he could have used that time to go see the dentist. But he didn't.
Yeah. Oh, B. Austin.
Yo, I think of a few things. Yo, being in D.C., I used to see the ball around, and his teeth are even worse in person than they are on TV, trust me. And I also think of the fact that, yo, I hate to put it this way, but there's no other way than just keep it real from my perspective. Yo, dude was like Allen Iverson's slave and baggage handler. Yo, how you going to be 6'9 and be somebody 5'11 slave and baggage handler? That
look,
don't
man,
even look right.
AI was on another level.
Yo, his wifey, JYD's wifey is hot, though. She tough.
Yeah.
You got that
money can buy.
Yo,
that's money
Doc
can buy.
Yo, a couple of things about JYD.
he had handle, but many people didn't know that. But, you know, he made his living off of defensive rebounds. Yeah, so he never really had a chance to show. He had that basic typical DC hands up, step across handle. But another thing, he was one of the first casualties. Yeah, he was one of the first casualties of the new NBA collective bargaining agreement. Not the one that just passed, but he was like one of the first players that could be like bought out under the new last deal. So he just kind of like the Knicks bought him out for like $18 million, and then that was it. Like not the deal that just passed, but the one before that. And he just was like, yo, I'm cool.
Yeah,
I'm gonna retire.
I know what you're talking about. You know, because the thing about it is, he like just disappeared. Like I don't ever remember him just like, you know, retiring or anything. He just basically disappeared. And you're right.
He didn't want to play ball no more.
It was a new CBA where you could just buy. First off, this is a whole side issue. I don't know how y'all feel about that, but I'm tired like cats getting bought out and then going to other teams. It like shifts the balance of power in the league somewhat.
Yeah.
I mean,
because yo, what happened? Michael Finley got bought out by Dallas, and then he went and signed with the Spurs. So they were expecting under that same deal. So they expected JYD to go sign with somebody else, and he was like, "Nah, I'm good. Like I'm cool."
Yeah, they paid him at 18. Yo, because the Spurs just signed your homie, Kill. But didn't he get bought out? The boy, what's the boy's name?
Shrek.
Yo, so how's Shrek going to get bought out and then go to the Spurs? That's crazy when you think about it. Gives some teams an unfair advantage.
Because you know, the only part of that rule that they changed was you can't get bought out, wait 30 days, and go back to the same team. You know what I'm saying? Or get traded, wait 30 days, and go back to the same team. But now, you know, like you said, they're moving.
Going to better teams.
And changing, yeah, like Derek Fisher, but he's not really changing any balance of power, but he, you know, went off to a championship caliber team. So,
Another thing with JYD, people don't realize on that AI team, this is not a shot at AI. This is just a shot at the talent that they had. Like, AI was at the point. They had Victor Page at the two. They had Junkyard Dog who went to the league, Othella Harrington, and Jahidi White. So that was typically like 4.5 NBA players, but they couldn't get past UMass.
Hey, 4.5, though.
Jahidi.
5.5, because Don Reed was on that team, too.
And wasn't he like Mr. Irrelevant? Wasn't he like the last pick in the draft or something?
Yep, the last dude.
But God gunned him out of the tournament. Yo, he said that they had 4.5 pros, yo. 4.5 to get you in the game. Anything less?
Because Victor Page had tryouts with the NBA, but he like overslept, so he got sent down to the CBA.
and they beat up a referee with a chair when they was going to give him another tryout.
Yeah, it's crazy.
4.5. Yeah, let's move on to the next birthday.
Is like 2.5 that NBA players.
Let's talk about Ronald Fred Cicely, a.k.a. Ronnie Cicely. He turns 47.
Yay!
Real quick, personally, I think of Ronnie Cicely, I think of him in Miami. Because he had a pretty good pro career. He played with my man Sherman Douglas and whatnot. But anyway, let's move on. Dr. Fred, what do you think of?
Yo, I think of him playing with Sherman Douglas down in Syracuse, and also Shaq's book that I listened to on our sponsorable, audible.com. You can go to our website and check our sponsors page, but how Shaq took the knees up, you know how Shaq puts his knees up? He got that from Ronnie Cicely, and he bought bought Ronnie Cicely's house when he went to the Heat. So there you go.
Yo,
Shaq was on his man.
Go ahead, Dev. What's your thoughts on Ronnie Cicely?
Nothing more than what Kill said, but I just happened to be in a conversation yesterday where somebody asked a bunch of people, you know, who was the best alley-oop combos that ever played in the NBA, and Sherman Douglas and Ronnie Cicely's names came up in that conversation because Ronnie used to catch some hoops.
But that was
a joke,
though.
Ronnie used to catch some hoops, yo. I don't know why.
I mean, it's one of the best, though. Like, seriously. Like,
oh, no. I mean, you know how those conversations get to the point where you name all the best. So now you're just throwing names.
I take Larry Hughes and the Flight Brothers.
Yeah, you know how it gets where the conversation where people just throwing names out after you, use the best one.
Well, let me ask you a question. Since you brought it up, who is the best alley-oop combo?
Peyton to Kemp.
Magic to Isaiah.
Here you go. How about Chris Paul
to Blake Griffin?
CP3 to CP3.
Nah.
See what I'm saying? That's how the conversation go. People start throwing stuff out there. Like,
let's leave that alone. Let's leave it alone. Hot Block Commander, when I say Ronnie Cycli, what do you think of?
He was rather a very, very talented bum or a bum-type star. I don't know. I didn't care. All I cared about was Glenn Rice and Harold Miner on that squad.
What about Willie Burton?
And Bimbo, Bimbo Coles.
Willie Burton, Kevin Edwards, Grant Long, Billy Thompson.
Yeah. In our chat, Leroy agrees with you, Deb. He said Peyton DeKemp got to be the greatest. So, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that's definitely got to be the greatest. Let's move on to the next birthday, by the way. That's Christopher James Berman, a.k.a. Chris Berman, turns 57.
Back.
I'm going to start with you. Hot Block Commander, Chris Berman, what are your thoughts?
I appreciate what he brings to the game, but I'm kind of tired of it now. Like, it's gotten corny, but he deserves his place and his just due in the sunshine for bringing humor and funniness, or trying to broadcast. Shout out to him. Happy birthday.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's go to Dev. What do you think about, I say, Chris Berman?
Yeah, Chris Berman is an original. He was one of the original members of ESPN. He's an original who's basically turned into a hack. Like Austin said, like, his act is tired. Like,
damn,
back when we were in middle school, you know, and he, you know, you watch SportsCenter after the games or NFL Countdown, whatever the show after the games were called. You know, he'd do the highlights, and, you know, you're in good hands with Allstott, and he gives everybody a nickname. But, you know, like 25 years later, you're like, okay, slow down. Like, that's enough. Like, in 25, 30 years, you couldn't change your shtick.
Nobody circles the wagon set like Chris Berman does. But let me ask you a question. Did you read that book about ESPN?
No, it's in my queue, though. On
yeah, by the way, you know, again,
Kindle.
You know, it's a shameless plug, but you can go to, you know, our sponsor Audible to get that book. But anyway, I got to take that's in my queue as well to read, because has a lot of information about when ESPN, you know, got started or what have you. But he is an original. Leroy said, does Berman own ESPN? He's not an owner of ESPN, but he is an original.
Yo, to be one of the first guys there, he probably has a good share. You know, stock.
Yeah.
In the
company. Yeah, well, they're owned by Disney, so he probably got a lot of that nice Walt Disney stock.
Yeah,
but
that
Mickey
Mouse. That Mick Mouse.
That Mickey Mouse stock. Doc, thanks for your thoughts on
Yo, dude has been getting it in for years, sitting in that same spot, recapping the highlights from Sunday. And, you know, he can go all the way, and all the nicknames and everything. You know, shout out to him. He's been doing it for a while. So, you know.
Yeah, even if they keep him on the football, he, like, take him off the home run derby. Because if he say back, one, he says that every time the ball is hit.
Yeah, why do they call him Boomer? Like, when they would call him Boomer, I was like, they talking about Boomer Esiason? Like, why? How did Boomer become his nickname?
Yeah, I don't know how he got that nickname.
That's probably a name of Tooth Gating. But, yo,
yeah.
My question, if y'all had to take a guess, right? If y'all had to take a guess, what do y'all think Chris Berman's salary is?
Chris Berman had to be making, like,
$5 million a year.
$5 million? I was thinking, like, maybe, like,
four. $3.5 million.
Like $800,000, but he is an original. He got to be making like $1 million.
So he's an original. His tenure, his pension probably diesel. But I wonder how much he makes a year, considering his tenure. Because, you know, a lot of those guys do make seven figures. So
he's
$5 million though.
I know.
Yeah, he's making just as much as the cats he's covering.
No, I said three and a half.
Back.
I think two is generous, man. I'm going to send him. He on Twitter, man. Let's find out what he goes. What's your salary?
Really? What you make, huh?
Let's move on.
Yo, Chris
Last
Berman,
birthday.
How much you
George,
Chris Berman, how much
George,
you hold?
George Allen Summerall, a.k.a. Pat Summerall, turns 82. Larry Allen. Anyway, let's start with you, Doc Ben.
Yo, I think of him being open about his substance abuse struggles. You know, he has that commercial about, you know, overcoming substance abuse. That's one thing that people don't really realize. And the fact that
he was a alcoholic.
Yeah, for many years, I didn't realize he was a kicker until, like, I was playing the Madden. I was like, oh, snap, Pat Summerall was a kicker.
Pat Summerall used to be sipping on that Betty Ford. But go ahead, Austin.
Yo, didn't Pat do for his broadcast with John Madden?
That was a good team.
Yeah, that was a great team. That's what I remember him for, like, nothing else but that. And I appreciate those years of broadcasting greatness. Happy birthday.
All a bunch. Yo, I just remember him every time the Cowboys say Larry Allen.
Yeah, anyway, his voice was even on the Madden video games for a long time.
And True Value Hardware, like we wrote in the Cowboys. But go ahead,
he 82. He must have played with a leather helmet on, like Pat Summerall.
He played with Frank Gifford and
he old.
Yo,
it's
a whole other story. We can get to another time, but I think the leather helmet should come back, yo.
They'll probably stop spearing each other, and we'll have to have these.
That's exactly my point, yo. They play with leather helmet cats. Yo, cats
we don't have to have,
you can have one crazy cat, but other than that, you know.
And then we won't have to have Roddy White tweeting, so, you know.
I tell my chick to give me a leather helmet.
Yo.
Anybody else got something they want to say about Pat Summerall, yo?
Nah, he's just my dude.
Oh, well, that's always the best Summerall. Happy birthday, homie. But let's move on. Dev, tell everybody what happened today in this past week while they were on the grind.
All right, everybody. While y'all were on the grind, it's brought to you by Philly Auto Design. Go to PhillyAutoDesign.com to check out the hottest selection of rims and tires on the internet. Better yet, go to their Facebook page. You got a better selection on the Facebook page. This just came in, actually. This wasn't even a part of our rundown, but just wanted to say a quick congrats to James Harden for winning the NBA Sixth Man of the Year. He took that home today. Probably got Ron on his mind. Probably looking forward to a matchup with the Lakers, so the Lakers need to hurry up and finish off Denver so he can get his revenge. But did y'all hear about Brittany Griner? She broke her wrist, quote-unquote, longboarding. Yo, I don't.
What happened to him?
She broke She broke her wrist longboarding. I didn't really know what longboarding is when I first heard the headline. I thought maybe she was like surfing or something.
It's skateboarding.
I'm like, they don't surf
board.
In Texas, but it's like, yeah, it's like an extra long skateboard. And you know,
yo,
she rides around
on a longboard like 6'12".
Yeah, she plopped down, broke her wrist. I believe her coach said she's going to be in a cast for 4 weeks.
He'll be all right.
Yeah, it's probably not going to have an effect on her next season. But she did, like last month, she withdrew from consideration for that final spot on the U.S. women's basketball team. She had cited like a family illness and her summer school schedule. So that was kind of surprising.
Never mind.
She turned the Olympic down the longboard.
I'm afraid from doing that, yo. I got so many comments I can make right now.
Yeah, leave her alone. We done bashed her all over her
whole career. I'm not trying to lose any of our good sponsors, man. So I'm just going to be quiet on that note.
Let's just move on. You know, Terrell Pryor, he's finally addressing the whole Ohio State scandal. I have a quote from him. He talks about why he, you know, sold his memorabilia and took the money. He said, the reason why I did it was to pay my mother's gas bill and some of her rent. I was telling the NCAA, please, anything that you can do. I gave my mother this so my sister wouldn't be cold, so my mother wouldn't be cold. They didn't have any sympathy for me. And, you know, he talked about the whole ordeal.
Great cash,
homie. He said it was humbling. He was like, you know, his face popped up on the screen and it seemed like he was the only person who did anything. He said he was a 21-year-old who felt like, you know, everything was against him because he, you know, got some money to do something good for somebody else. So what do y'all think about Terrell Pryor and him speaking up about this whole thing?
You mean with the booster system that they got at Ohio State, one of them boosters couldn't break your mama off something proper?
First of all, do you
believe
that whole thing? I mean,
no.
It's not our place to judge,
no,
but we do that once a week at 6 to 8. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Like, I don't want to go back to that time and find pictures of him on TV with tattoos and jewelry and all that kind of stuff, and he kind of gives us the side story.
With tattoos and money. Tax? Come on, man.
Well, we don't believe you need more people.
Well, yeah, he tried to play the sympathy role. I don't want my sister to be cold. Weren't they showing him riding around in a car?
Yeah, he was riding around and getting it. I mean, he's full of it, man. He was selling all kinds. I'm, you know, man, I don't believe him, but, I mean, it was a good shot, though. Good story. It sounded like a Ghostface Killer song, man. I see with my mom and my sister, Cole.
Yeah, John,
John, you feed the bed. John.
Danny Siegel song. You know what I'm saying? With James and Rice.
Yo.
Why are you gonna bring that up now? You're in the NFL, everything's behind you. You already served your whatever suspension and repercussions. Like, what's the purpose of saying that now? Even if it is
cheese sandwiches down for the weekend.
Pretty sure the heat is on now and everybody's cool. You know,
yeah,
we all good now. We out the hood
now. Weekend, locked up with dirty.
Tiger Woods last week missed the cut at the Wells Fargo Championship, but he gets an opportunity to try again today, you know, because this weekend the Players' Championship is going on. But he finished today at 2 over. So it's just not looking good for Tiger. Like, just, I don't know.
Can't be at the Players' Championship if he ain't a player no more.
Yo, when everything first happened with Tiger, I remember us having a show, and I asked the question. I said, "Does anybody think Tiger will ever get back to where he was?"
Yo, you might be right.
Here's the thing though. The one person who was adamant, like, "Yo, no, he wasn't," was you, Austin. If I listened back to it, you was like, "No, he's not." And I ain't gonna lie to you, I thought you was a little crazy. I was like, come on, man. He's gonna get back, and you were right.
And I'm gonna keep it. And I'm gonna keep it funky. I'm gonna keep it funky because that's what we do on this show. I just said that to go against the grain because I don't like the boy. I ain't believe it.
I'll be honest though. When you said that, I was like, there's no way he can't get back to him.
Yo, it might be some truth to it. It might be some truth to it because it's all predicated on Tiger's yamage control. Like before, he wasn't controlled. Now he's under yamage control, so he's just not focusing the way however he was.
But now,
now
he doesn't have a wife, so he doesn't even have to be under yamage control. I don't even understand.
Yeah, but you know what though? Yo, it's one of them things where I don't even think it was about him getting the yamage. It was about the fact of him sneaking around doing what he wanted to do. So now that he's able to do it, it's probably not even as much fun to him no more.
Yeah,
good point.
It's the challenge. You know what I'm saying?
It's
challenge.
It's like, yo, I'm married with a whole family.
Yo,
I'm living two lifestyles.
That challenge is gone.
So it's like now before a tournament, he probably sit around the crib with like 4 or 5 Jones at one time. Just sitting
so
there and running around watching movies.
Tired of getting married again and then, like, you know, cheating on his wife.
Yo, I want y'all to think about this. Yo, that man Michael Jordan, yo, he messes people's lives up, man.
What do you do about
Mike
what do you do?
Because
why you did that?
All of these, I said Mike Jordan messes people's lives up. Tiger was hanging with Mike. Antoine Walker was trying to beat Mike, chasing after him. Rip Hamilton.
Roy Jones signed with Brand Jordan and got his wig split. Randy Moss. But everybody, yo, we got Brand Jordan on.
Yeah, it's gear week.
I blame him.
I know this happened like kind of late last week after our show, though, but Mariano Rivera tore his ACL and his meniscus shagging fly balls. Now, he's 42 years old. When it first happened, he seemed unsure about his future, but then, you know, a day or two went by, and he said, I'm not going out like that. So do you guys think, you know, after – you know, getting surgery and repairing his meniscus and his ACL, that he'll be able to come back and be the same closer that he's been throughout the years?
Yo, I don't think people realize how great Mariano Rivera is because of the fact that he's a relief pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But, yo, it's like pitch for pitch or, like, you know how you say ball for ball, pitch for pitch. Yo, he might be one of the top 5 pitchers to ever play. And with that being said, he was a great competitor. He was a very respectful guy. And I actually feel sorry for him because he got hurt shagging fly balls. And the thing about it is, they said that I've heard coaches say that he was actually one of the better outfielders, and they always
yeah,
said that he
yo.
Was one of the players that if needed,
yo.
He could play, you know, every day. I'm sorry, go
yo.
Ahead.
Yo, they said the boy was athletic enough to be one of the better center fielders in the MLB earlier on in his career. They said in his
yeah.
20, he was a tremendous fielder. My whole thing is, and I never put it this way, but I've looked at his career, and not being the biggest baseball fan there is, but understanding what it is that he does, you know, I hate dude because I'm a Phillies fan, but I love what he does at the same time, man. Because
every way
I feel. When you watch baseball, he gives me exactly what I think a pitcher should be. He comes in, and you're not going to hit the ball.
And he has, and he's done this all these years with one pitch. He only has one
yo.
Pitch. Remember we talked about you,
Darvish? That's just so crazy. He's nice. Yo, this dude
remember,
is that nice.
Remember like 2 weeks ago we talked about you, Darvish, and how he has seven pitches, and that's unheard of? This
yeah.
dude has done this with one pitch. Now, I'm one of those people, though, Jimmy. I used to be one of those people that you talk about because I always kind of discounted the role of a closer. Because I'm like, okay, your whole role is to come into the game and pitch an inning.
You lose from not having one.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, in pitch an inning, like, when your team already has the lead, you know what I'm saying, that should be something that you're supposed to do. But over the years,
yeah.
when you look at things, like you said, like, you know, Brad Lidge, when he first came to Philly, that championship year, he was great. But then when you realize that, you know, when Brad Lidge turned into a pumpkin at midnight and he blew save after save after save, you start to realize, like, this is not that easy of a job because it's basically what we, you know, we all kind of, when we
yeah,
when we're judging players in every sport, we give the clutch meter a big part of that. So basically that's
often.
What he's doing. He's coming
so
in.
His clutch often puts to the top of the list, even if they don't even have to.
Right.
Yo, clutch is everything.
That's what I'm saying. So can you imagine, like, if LeBron was a closer?
But, like, on a real note, though, I feel bad for him because, just like they said in our chat room, at 42, that's what's going to be difficult for him to come back. But I kind of figured with the kind of competitor he is, he's not going to want to go away from the game, like, without it being, like, you know, on his own terms,
his term,
so to speak.
Yeah. But one more thing, Jim, which makes it even more glaring, like, right away, is the fact that David Robertson, you know, the guy who took his place, in two games has already blown a save and lost the game. So
that's what I'm saying.
It's making his case
no,
look
man,
that much better.
How important a closer is. It's like, I remember as a kid watching baseball, I used to do the same thing, man. I mean, forget closers, man. And shout out to my man Dennis Eckersley because he made me realize just how important a closer was. And I used to try to go outside and do that little, like, side home. Anyway, but single
yeah, it's
a
pressure,
was, like,
a pressure-filled
said,
situation.
So this dude right here, man, is that dude. Like, and I don't think people realize just how great he is, but they will now.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so
yo, real quick, I was going to say is, what's up with all the ACLs being torn in New York between Iman Shumpert, Baron Davis, and Mariano Rivera?
It's like ACLs
yo,
in New York
and
Achilles in Philly. Achilles in Philly.
Baron Davis. Baron Davis tore his life.
I think Baron Davis should just quit. Seriously, he's messed up his knees too much. I think he should just call it quit.
I hate to agree with you because he's one of my favorites because he's a fat boy and he's athletic. But it's time to go.
All right, well, we got one more thing to get to on the ground real quick before I don't know if any of you guys saw this, but I actually DVR'd it and then came home and watched it. Terrell Owens paid a visit to Dr. Phil's show the other day, and on the show with him was his three baby mamas. And, you know, they were basically talking about...
I got
about,
the baby mama drama!
Yeah, that's all it was. It was a show of baby mama drama, and they were talking about how T.O. only sees some of his kids maybe once a year, and then T.O. was talking about the whole child support situation and how he used to give it willingly without the courts interference.
Mandating. Yeah.
And they used to go you know, he said he used to go up with it like 6,000, 8,000, 12,000, and then one of his baby mamas found out that the other one was getting 20, so then she wanted 20, and then they were disputing this on the show, and it was a big argument. T.O. looked real uncomfortable and mad the whole time. That's why I was telling people he had to get a check to do this, because I don't think he would have done this without getting paid.
Yeah.
Yo, my whole thing with this is, outside of the financial aspect, is I was very shocked to hear about the time that he spends with his kids, considering his upbringing and how it affected him.
I know.
That, like, shocked
You repeat the cycle, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what most people end up doing, though. Like, you would think that he would do it the other way.
You see other people who go the other way, too, though. Who,
right.
You know, go out their way to be the opposite, so to speak. And that's like shocking.
It takes more of your soul and your heart to be able to go the opposite direction, even though you know how bad you feel with in that situation, and you can relate. Mm-hmm. Once it becomes your kids and you got so much going on, especially in his life, you know how he liked the spotlight. It's like it became easier and easier for him.
You're saying you have to be stronger mentally, and you calling him a mental midget is what you're saying.
Not necessarily a mental midget, but from a heart and soul perspective and character, I mean, maybe he's a little deficient there. Remember, his pop wasn't there to raise him, so what does he have in it? He hasn't had very strong male role models, I don't believe.
Yo, man, I just wish the homie PJ was here. He's out accepting the award on our behalf right now, but because he's a real fan. He's accepting
the
award. War Room wins awards all over, so he's accepting awards.
I know. I also wish PJ was here because he's our boxing guy, and, you know, we're about to talk about some boxing right after these messages from War Room Sports. You guys can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. You can click on the Contact Us tab while you're on the website to send us a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. Now, if you have a small business or a business of any size, we reach a lot of people on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So if you want to help your business get out there, hit us up about that sponsorship and advertising. It's for your own benefit. For general inquiries, you can email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing our site, you know, just click on the memorabilia tab. You can buy some War Room Sports merchandise, or you can click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair in Sports and War blog. Then you can click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple devices. Watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Right now, you can join the JW Philly Realty chat room during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. Now, to get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Now, we've been noticing lately, you know, our ratings are up, so people are listening, but the chat room isn't on fire like it used to be. So we want you guys to, you know, to talk to us during the show. So jump into that chat room and, you know, be a part of everything.
Yo,
we'll be
speaking
taking
of that,
questions.
Man, shout out to Rank Top 5 in our chat room, and I just want him to know since he's listening that his Bulls are going home tonight, yo.
All right, we'll definitely be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak to us, just dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, so raise your hand, and we might just call on you. So, yeah, we got a special guest tonight, Ty Barnett. He's a boxer out of D.C. who's fighting this weekend. But before we get into his interview, let's talk about the fight this past weekend between Mayweather and Cotto, you know, just briefly for a few minutes. What did you guys think about the fight? I mean, if you've been under a rock, Floyd Mayweather won the fight by unanimous decision, but this was a little different from any Floyd Mayweather fight that you probably have been used to seeing.
Let me say two things. One, I've never seen someone box a better fight against Floyd Mayweather. I don't think Cotto had the talent or the ability to beat Floyd, because Floyd is just that good, and it's a shame for him to have that type of skill and be a coward. but he's just skill-wise one of the best to ever do it. But Cotto fought a masterful fight, and I think that Floyd took a lot more chances to give the people a show than he had to actually win that fight. He didn't have to stand in the corner. He didn't have to go toe-to-toe with him to rack up the points and get the win. But I think it was a machismo thing. He wanted to show people, look, I ain't scared. I'll throw. You know, I'll go hand-in-hand with him. You know, I'm not just going.
I don't necessarily believe that. I mean, he said that after the fight, you know, I wanted to give the people a show. But, I mean, all these years we've been watching Floyd fight, he doesn't really put himself in unnecessary danger. I mean, I think Cotto just kind of took the fight to him differently than anybody else. And Floyd, you know, he showed and proved. Like, if this is the way you want to do it, I can do it this way too. But I don't necessarily think that was his game plan. Like, I'm going to go out here and brawl with this dude to give the fans what they want to see. But, you know, if a guy is coming at you differently than you've ever seen, then you got to adjust and adapt. And I think Floyd did a great job of doing that. And though Cotto fought a great fight, Floyd still won most of the rounds. It was one of those type of things where you haven't seen anybody get off on Floyd like this, but Floyd still did his thing.
In my opinion, this fight just shows just how great Floyd is. And the reason I say that is, it's 12 rounds. He won like 9 of those rounds, but people are so used to not seeing him get touched at all that people thought the fight was closer because he had bloodied his nose up. I mean, he's fighting a top 5 pound-for-pound guy, so he's not fighting
I don't think
bump.
It was closer. I don't think the fight was closer. I just thought it was
I don't either,
fight.
But what I'm saying is people's perception, like if you were looking on Facebook or Twitter during the fight, people were acting as if he was losing the fight just because they've never seen him get hit before. It's like,
well, actually, that goes down to the way boxing is judged. If it wasn't judged round by round, then the fight would have been closer. But since it's round by round, Cotto can get some good stuff off in a round, but Floyd could get off a little bit more and win that round. So
I think he won
at least 9 rounds. I was
no, but
I
mean the judges agree with you. But what I'm saying is the fans were so used to seeing him dominate and not get touched that the fact that he had a bloody nose made him feel as though something really happened. I mean. It's like he's at not a disadvantage, so to speak, but it's like he's so great that sometimes it's like just him getting touched makes people think like, uh-oh. Like, but Cotto made so many mistakes, like people say he fought a great fight. He did, but he didn't. Floyd was throwing a hook, like going around his glove. It took him 4 rounds to adjust.
I heard a lot of people say, Cotto, I mean, and, I haven't seen all of his fights, so maybe it was something to how he used to be, but they were talking about his stamina. And I was like, it looked like Cotto got tired. To me, it looked like he got tired. But people were saying he was so much better than before. So I'm like, damn, what was he doing before?
Well,
for his stamina in this fight.
It's funny because that fight that he had where he got cheated, it kind of like messed him up, so to speak. Like, I watched a lot of his fights coming up in he doesn't take the chances he used to. His left to the body is the best in the world. He didn't really throw that much because it's like he couldn't throw it because he didn't want to get what was coming back. But he didn't used to fight that way. But ever since he got rocked, but even though he did get cheated, he got revenge. But it doesn't matter. It changed him as a fighter, in my opinion. And
he's less of a chance taker now. He used to take risks. He used to take risks, and that was based on his ability. Because take Floyd out of the equation, he's still one of the tops in the world off talent alone. So he used to gamble a lot more because of inferior competition. Now, when I say that I think Floyd took some chances in that fight, there were times when Floyd was backed into the corner or backed into the ropes. I'm of the belief, and y'all can disagree with me. I mean, educate me here, but I'm of the belief that Floyd is so good that Floyd goes where Floyd wants to in the ring based on when he wants to and how he wants to. Dude doesn't have to be backed into a corner because he rolls and slips, punches so well, and moves his feet so well. There were times when I felt like dude wanted to take a little bit of punishment to give a little bit of punishment to prove a point. He didn't need to do that to score those points.
He probably gets bored of being a professional boxer and not get hit.
Yeah, but for somebody who seems very intent on keeping that zero at the end of his record, I don't believe that he would do anything on purpose to give a show. Why? Why?
I thought about that.
As defensively as he fights, he murders the pay-per-view every time. So if they're going to keep coming, why you got to switch it up and take chances?
Here's the thing about it, though. I thought about that, and I agree that I don't know if he did it on purpose, but I think he might be losing some of his foot speed, because even if you remember the last fight before all the controversy, he was taking a little bit of hits then, too.
Yeah, that's inevitable, man. Nobody beats Father Tom.
Absolutely. Father Tom is undefeated. But the thing is, he was fighting a little closer than normal in his last couple fights.
Exactly.
So it may be a situation where he's not doing it like, hey, I'm going to show how tough I am. You know, maybe he's slowing down a little bit. Hand speed is still amazing, though, but maybe he's like slowing down a little bit because even in Ortiz fight, he fought a little bit closer than we're used to seeing.
And quiet as kept, as much as he loves his trainer, his uncle, dude says nothing in the corner. And you know why? It's because he never had to. It's because he never had to. I don't think dude is that great of a trainer besides the fact that, you know, they got their little regimens that look nice in the train. Because I love to see Floyd train. But when Floyd, you know, the last few fights when he's gotten into a little bit of trouble, he'll go out there and say something like, all right, now go out there and hit that mother. Like, what kind of advice is that? Like, what are you doing?
He probably used to be a great trainer, but he forgot what to say at this point because he's never really. I just think
he got complacent with the fact that he never really had to give much.
I think
y'all are giving him too much credit. I don't think he ever had talent as a trainer, but Floyd loves him and wanted to give him a job.
Yeah, I just think Floyd was probably just that intelligent of a boxer. Like,
when he gets into a little bit of trouble,
Roger Mayweather says nothing. All he does is call the other dude an MF.
Go out there and kill that motherfucker.
I'm just happy we got to see a good, clean fight, you know, no drug addicts or anything. I'm glad we got to see it. It was a very entertaining fight.
No punching
after the bell and all that. Yeah, no cowardly.
We're about to go 45 minutes of insults from the Floyd camp and the Pacquiao camp because we got both of them camps here in the war room.
Money team.
But let's go into our interview with like I said, DC boxer, lightweight, Ty Barnett, about his upcoming fight on Saturday night in his hometown of Washington, D.C. You know, we're going to bring Ty on. He's boxing this weekend at the D.C. Convention Center, representing his hometown. Ty, can you hear us? You're in the war room.
Hey, man, what's up? Yeah, I can hear you.
What's going on, man?
Too much. Just left the gym not too long ago. Just laid back right now.
That's what's up. Thanks for joining us today, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
No problem.
Okay,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. We're not going to hold you too long. Let's get right into some of the questions we have leading up to your fight. Let's go back to your past. How long have you been in boxing, and how did you get started?
Well, I've been in boxing for a little over 16 years, and I started boxing the age of 13.
How did you get started boxing? Did you just pick it up as a hobby, or how did you get started?
It was always something I liked to do as a kid. You know, my whole family was involved in boxing, and my father, my uncles, you know, everybody was involved in it, and it's just in my blood, man.
So once you got into it, like, what made you decide later on that this is what you wanted to do for a living?
Well, that was always my dream, to be a professional fighter.
Okay.
It wasn't hard to make that decision, man. I'm living my dream.
That leads to another question. You said you're living your dream. When you were coming up watching boxing, who were some of the boxers that you looked up to? Like, who inspired you and said, look, this is what I want to do?
Roy Jones, Mike Tyson, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the guys from my area, you know, the Mark Two Sharp Johnsons and guys like that. Shane Mosley.
Okay.
It's sad for me to say that he's one of my favorite fighters right now, but Shane Mosley, too.
Yeah, I mean,
he had
a good run. It's not, you know, he might be sticking around a little too long now, but, you know,
you said you're a Shane fan. Let me ask you a question. Outside of Shane and, you know, the boxers of the past, who do you like to watch now? Like, who are some of your favorite fighters now?
Andre Ward, that's one of my favorite fighters. Lamont Peterson, you know, that's somebody I grew up with in the gym. Of course, Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, okay.
The money team.
All right,
so
kind of born right now, so I don't have a favorite heavyweight to watch.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I hear a lot of people, you know, because MMA is getting kind of popular now, people saying boxing is dying. I strongly disagree because, you know, people just not looking at the lower divisions for the fights. But, you know, the casual fan, they kind of gravitate towards the heavyweight division. So if the heavyweight division isn't doing much, then they think boxing isn't doing much. But getting to your style a little bit, you know, some fighters are classified as technicians, some brawlers, some defensive fighters, you know, kind of like Floyd. How would you describe your fighting style?
I'm what you call a boxer puncher. You know, I can box, I can bang when I want to. You know, I'm really getting out of the habit of banging because I tend to bang a little too much than I have to. Being as though I'm 5'10", me boxing, that'll make my fights a whole lot easier, you know.
Right. That's so basically you're saying, you know, you're versatile. You know what I'm saying? You can be a technician, you can be a brawler. All right, that's cool.
Yeah, I have a question for you. You mentioned that you're 5'10". But let's bring it to your fight this Saturday. Being as though you're 5'10", and you're fighting Robert Don't Lose to Lose. But what weight are you fighting him at?
Lightweight, 135.
So what is your walking around weight?
I walk around no more than 147 pounds.
Okay, so you don't have much to cut when it's time to get, you know.
Is that difficult to do? Like trying to make weight.
It's always difficult to lose 12-13 pounds, you know, but it's not too hard because a lot of guys, they're coming from 20 or 30 pounds over their weight class. Got to lose all that weight. So I guess it's not too hard for me.
I need to get with you off the show so you can show me how to do that. I stand to lose a few.
All right.
But, you know, when you got a fight coming up, like what's your normal training regimen for a fight? Like how long do you train and, you know, what kind of things do you do to get ready?
When it's fight time, we normally do two a day, you know, go in and train twice a day, I do my boxing and all my technique work early in the morning, then come in later on and do my strength and conditioning.
Cool.
Yeah, that's crazy. You said two a days. Like how far out do you start those two a days?
Like a week before the fight.
Okay.
You said how far out do I start them or stop them before the fight?
No, start. Like when you're starting to prepare for a fight, like how far out do you start the two a days? Is it like, 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out?
At least 6 weeks out. Beginning of the camp.
6 weeks?
Two a days.
Okay, got you. Well, let's talk about the future. What are your future plans in the fight game? Like where do you see yourself, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years from now? What are your goals moving forward?
Within 3 to 5 years, I should have a title shot, you know, and capture one of them world titles and become world champion and then move forward from there.
Gotcha.
We'll be rooting for you on that one. Now, this is off topic just a little bit, and, you know, it's fully up to you because we didn't even talk about this earlier, so, you know, if you don't want to speak on it, that's on you, but with both of y'all being from D.C., and I see that you mentioned him earlier as a friend, and I heard you and Lamont Peterson were pretty close. I just wanted to know, what are your thoughts about, you know, the news that came out yesterday that he tested positive for a banned substance? Like, how shocked were you to hear that? And you think he'll, you know, his name will be cleared?
Yeah, I was very shocked to hear it, you know, and I know Lamont personally, man. I know that guy. He wouldn't take no steroids. You know, if it did happen, it was an honest mistake. And
right.
Hopefully his name get cleared.
Yeah, I spoke to some people, and they was like, they said the same thing. Like, that's just so far outside of his character that, you know, it had to be some kind of mistake.
I got a question for you, being that you've been in the fight game so long, because I see this happen a lot of times, not only in boxing, but MMA and even the Olympics. There's so many banned substances that cats take, like, stuff put over the counter from Walmart or GNC and, you know, not knowing, like, the effects of it. How do you, like, keep up with all that stuff? Because, you know, there's so many things on that ban. Because it didn't necessarily say steroids, it said a banned substance. So that could be anything.
That could be something in cough syrup, you know what I mean?
Right. But the best thing to do is to stay away from all that stuff and go with natural things, you know?
Right.
You can get get all your nutrients, all your vitamins and minerals from natural stuff. You know, you don't have to go to GMP or, you know, take no vitamins and all that other crazy stuff. You got to get it the right way from the foods, from the eating the proper foods and things like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
He got that big fight coming up, so I hope everything's cool. You know, I hope the fight still goes on. But,
I got one more question get him out of here, Dev. I got one more question for you. Being as though you are a pro boxer, what are your thoughts personally on MMA? Do you watch MMA or do you just a boxing guy?
No, I mean, I watch it from time to time, you know, but I don't really know who the stars are in MMA. You know, I don't keep up with it like that, but I watch it. If I'm in the house and it comes on, I check it out. You know,
okay.
Only if it's an exciting fight. I'm not really an MMA fan.
Gotcha. Just wanted to ask, because, you know, some guys are like both and some, you know, like I'm a boxing guy, you know. I just was wondering.
Yeah, I'm strictly, for the most part, I'm strictly boxing. I don't really watch football or basketball or nothing. I really don't keep up with that stuff no more.
You focused on your sport. I feel you.
Yeah, when the Redskins drafted the guy RG3, you know, I kept seeing RG3 this, RG3 that on Twitter and Facebook, and I thought it was a new video game that came out. I asked my family, I said, "What the hell is an RG3? That's a new game?" They like, "Nah, man." You know, and they schooled me and hit me to who he was, but. I don't know
about that stuff, man. I feel you. But we know you got your website coming out this week, and you got the website launch party going on. Just tell, you know, because we got a big audience in D.C., just tell everybody where the party is, and you can give everybody the website address.
Well, the party is at the Stadium Nightclub. In D.C., you know, I'm pretty sure everyone's familiar with what club that is. It's Thursday. It's my website launch party. And the website is tybarnettko.com. You know, it'll be up and done, up and running tomorrow.
All right, and Stadium Club, that's at 2127 Queens Chapel Road in Northeast D.C. Also saw that you were, like, at the after party. Y'all were having a contest where you're giving away two tickets to the fight on Saturday.
No, we're doing that at the stadium.
Okay, that's what's up. So, yeah, we'll definitely send some people down there and see if they can win some tickets to the fight. But, Ty, we wanted to thank you for coming on with us this evening, man. It's a pleasure. We're going to be rooting for you on Saturday. A few of us from the War Room might even be up in the building. So, good luck to you, man.
Okay, man. I appreciate it, man. Big shout out to War Room.
Yeah, right. Blessings, man. Good luck.
Amen.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you, man.
All right,
everybody. That was pro boxer Ty Barnett. Like we said, he's 19-2-1, and you know he has goals of being the world champ one day. So we're gonna see what he's all about on Saturday evening. If you need that information, if you're in the D.C. area and you need that information for the fights, they're at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center. That's the D.C. Convention Center, to everybody who knows. That's 801 Mount Vernon Place in Northwest Washington, D.C., and the doors open at 7 o'clock. Now, if you need ticket information, you can go to Ty's new website, which is www.tybarnettko.com. That's TYBARNETTKO.com. He'll be giving away two tickets tonight at his website launch party, which is actually going on
right now at Stadium Nightclub. That's 2127 Queens Chapel Road, Queens Boulevard.
you don't want to miss the stadium.
Yeah. If you're in D.C., get on down to the stadium right now and party with the future champ.
Rank Top 5 said that's not in Northeast D.C. because he said, hell no, he ain't coming to no Northeast D.C.
Man, every section of D.C. got certain parts. There's nice parts to Northeast, nice parts to Northwest, even nice parts to Southeast, but there's certain parts that you don't want to be in. But, you know, they're not going to put the stadium club in the terrible part. They try and get some business in that. But, yeah, they're down there partying right now into the wee hours. So head on down to stadium if you're in the district this evening.
There's a lot of lovely young ladies there, and they're adverse to clothing.
So, you know, actually because we actually recorded that interview a little earlier, we've actually gotten some new information about the Lamont Peterson situation that we didn't talk about with Ty. And like you said, that's a close personal friend of his. He grew up in the gym with him. But the Amir Khan Lamont Peterson fight has indeed been canceled. They were supposed to actually vote on that today, but they made that judgment last night that they were going to go ahead and cancel the fight. And what he had tested positive for was a synthetic testosterone. Fellas, I know you've been reading up on the story and getting the information on it. What do you think about the whole situation, Jim?
I think that brother got caught with his hand in the cookie jar, man.
That's what's up, Jim. Yo, but I think that the craziest part to me about this whole story is the fact that he asked for, like, the Olympic-style testing himself.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, that's what got him caught up, but he's the one that asked to have it.
Now, see, this is this is what happened, like, the events, the timeline, if you know, per se. He failed the first test on April 12th. Now, Amir Khan's camp, and even Golden Boy, like, everybody's a little upset that they didn't come forth with that back then because they felt that they could have saved the event. They could have gotten Khan, another opponent. You know, a lot of people who have travel plans to go to Vegas, even some people, you know, Khan fans from outside of the United States who have travel plans to go to Vegas, you know, they could have kept their travel plans or what have you. But they didn't say anything then because they felt that, well, there's a chance that the B sample, because, you know, every time you fail, then they go to the B sample will come back positive. But the B sample came back, come back negative. The B sample came back positive also, which was just, you know, late last week. So he finally had to come and actually admit that he took testosterone pellets under the supervision of a doctor in Las Vegas because of fatigue. He was feeling fatigue. And what else did he say?
On the street, by the way, for the audience out there, on the street, those are known as the Pacquiao pellets.
Fatigue and confusion.
Fatigue, yeah. It was a lot of things going on. But, you know, they're saying either way, you know, it's a banned substance, whether you're taking it under a doctor's care or not. And like what Jimmy said, the crazy part about it is Lamont Peterson's camp was the ones pushing for these random urine tests leading up to the fight. What they also admitted to was the fact that he took these testosterone pellets back in October. Now, that raises some eyebrows also with the Amir Khan camp because their first fight, which was controversial in itself, was in December. So you basically just admitted that, you know, you took this testosterone prior to their first matchup, which everybody think that he got the decision because of a little bit of home cooking. The fight was in D.C. Khan was he was dot 2 points for pushing off, you know, something that you rarely see in boxing, a ref taking points for a fighter pushing off. They said there was someone from the boxing commission ringside touching scorecards, and they're not allowed to do that. It was just a lot of controversy around their first fight. And Lamont Peterson, going into this fight, his whole thing was, you know, I'm going to beat him more convincingly just to show the world that, you know, the first fight wasn't a fluke. So I was really looking forward to this fight. We were even going to try to have Lamont on the show next week prior to the fight. But
This is a crazy situation, man. It's a crazy situation.
And
so
that's
I guess
the only thing
just...
that's bad for me. Like, you know, I understand the whole concept of him, like, him taking the Pacquiao pellets, but it's like he's the one that asked for the testing, and that to me is what made the whole, like, the whole story crazy.
I think Jimmy and Manny Pacquiao must have had a stare off on the street or something, cause you go at that man every 4 seconds of the time.
No
hey,
doubt.
Pacquiao ain't get caught. If he did something, he ain't get caught.
Hey, that's why now you know why he ain't gonna go for the test. He's like, I ain't doing that. They will not.
You keep saying
me.
That, but they, yo, man, they resolved that a long time ago. Why we gotta keep talking about the same stuff?
Hey, look, man,
he agreed
look,
to
man,
that
man,
a long
man,
time ago.
Man, the man's on drugs, man. It's what it is, man. You know, he's a good fighter. He's, you know.
All right, but
I like a lot of drug addicts. Shout out to DMX.
So
go ahead.
So basically, now it's a matter of whether or not they're gonna. Well, they're gonna probably strip Lamont Peterson of his title, so he's a unified junior welterweight title holder. But now it's like, are they just going to strip the title, or are they going to go back to that December fight, give a no contest, and give Amir Khan his belts back? Because, you know, he's been crying about his belts ever since he lost them. And now this week, with this whole thing, he's been crying even more. So I don't know. It's a lot of disappointed people out there. You know, I know some Lamont Peterson fans, and, you know, there's a lot of people out there that's pretty disappointed. But we're going to go ahead and move on from that. To give you any information that we may have on that in the coming weeks. But that's a sad situation. And thanks and shout out to Ty Barnett for coming on. And
yeah, shout out. And if y'all haven't seen, y'all can go to our Facebook page and also like our Google Play page. We got a little video of him in a previous fight where he stretched somebody's boots something fierce. Anyway, let's jump into some hot topics going on in the world of sports. Hot topics are brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, your Palm phone. Shout out to Rank Top 5 with the old BlackBerry. Anyway, the latest episode is always available for you. No thinking needed and no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Click on the Stitcher logo on our website, or you can go right to stitcher.com/thewarroom. When they ask you for a promo code, type in The War Room, one word. And the reason you do that is because you enter into a contest to win thousands of dollars. Now, whether you download from our website or if you go to stitcher.com/thewarroom, remember the promo code, The War Room, you know, to get put into the raffle, so to speak. But anyway, let's jump right into the NCAA and the Big East commissioner, John Marinaro, resigning amid conference shakeup. At this point, I don't know who's in the Big East because, like Akilah said, it should be called the Big, whatever he said, Big, Southwest, East, you know.
You know what, Jim? I don't think John Marinaro knew who's in the Big East either, and that's why he quit. Like, it's just a big shakeup going on. His league is not going to be – this is a historic league, you know, especially when it comes to basketball, and they're just shaking it up a little too much. So I guess the pressure for him was It's crazy. This was the statement. This is how he announced it on Monday morning. He said, "Our recent expansion efforts have stabilized the conference for a long term, and we are likewise well positioned for our very important upcoming television negotiations. As a result, I felt this was the right time to step aside and to let someone else lead us through the next chapter of our evolution." Now, you know, he wanted to accept the TV deal about a year ago and was shot down by a 12-4 vote within the conference. And they said Georgetown and Pittsburgh were leading the charge not to accept the TV deal. So I'm thinking that TV deal must have had something to do with football because Georgetown was like, you know, we ain't getting no money off of that with this team.
They're playing a Patriot League for football. And, Jimmy, actually the name of it was the Benz NWC, the Big East, North, South, Midwest Conference.
There you go.
Yeah,
no,
and I think Marinaro,
I
think Akil submitted that to the league, and Marinaro couldn't remember the name, so he just quit.
Yeah, man. It's like I remember as a kid watching St. John's and Georgetown and Syracuse, and like, come on, man. Hey, Dad, remember we had the old starter jackets, Syracuse and Georgetown?
No.
But the Big East is the truth. What happened?
Now I gotta get a TCU starter. Like, come on, man.
Come on, man.
I guess at what point do people realize that it's not cool to sacrifice the integrity and quality of what your product is for profits? I guess
never.
I don't know.
Never. What world do you live in?
In this world? Not going to happen.
Yo, cash rules everything around you, brother. Cream, get the money. Anyway,
that was our outro song last week.
Let's talk some baseball.
Well,
man.
I hope we never sell the war room out.
Oh, no, no doubt. Then again, for the right price. Anyway, listen, Albert Pujols hit his first home run of the season on Sunday. Now, remember, this guy is a 10-year, $240 million man. And he just got his first home run. What do you guys think? I mean, was he putting too much pressure on himself? Is the contract too much pressure? What's going on with
Pujols? It must be, man. But Albert Pujols is like the last person you expect to struggle like this. I mean, maybe once he got that diesel contract, you know, he got off that bond, so, you know, or something. But you know, if they ever found out, because like, Albert is like the angel, if they ever found out that that was the case
no
and he really was on something, I think a lot of baseball fans would probably just go jump off the bridge or anything because he was the last hope for an honest baseball league.
Hey, one thing I got to say is, or Hershiser brought up a good point. Anytime these guys sign these ridiculous deals and hundreds of millions of dollars, they wound up not paying off for the team, and it wound up hamstringing the franchise, and then the players become.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just home runs. It's not just that he wasn't hitting home runs. The dude is batting like 196. You know, that's crazy. He had a 2-for-5 game last night. But, you know, Albert Pujols and one home run and 196, that just doesn't mix. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
He is in the American League now, so I can go ahead and say I hope he gets out of his slump. You know, if he was still in the National League, hey, too bad.
And they pointed out that CeCe paid off. CeCe won a chip when he got all that bread. It's just crazy. It's crazy to see Pujols bat below the Mendoza line. It's like, you're out.
Even
Pujols,
in that, I don't know. Well, throughout the season, of course, but even in that World Series against the Phillies, CeCe didn't pitch all that well in that series. He usually went up against, you know, one of their better pitchers, and he didn't pitch all that well, but that Yankees offense, you know, definitely did their thing in the World Series. Cats like A-Rod woke up when he usually doesn't wake up and clutch, and then Matsui just went 8 shat all over Philadelphia. But
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy.
But CeCe definitely,
even then,
he definitely paid off.
I was going to say, and in the World Series, Albert, he had, like, one great game, and then the rest of it, he was, like, cabbage. Just this
past
year.
Oh, we got one goddamn hit? Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
A-Rod got, like, $200 million bills.
Yeah.
But
anyway, I mean, he's pressing, and it's just crazy to see him, like, struggle this bad, but.
Somebody out there that's not pressing.
Yeah, it is what it is, man. Let's talk about somebody who's, like, you know, balling right now, which is one Josh Hamilton.
Man.
He ran 5-for-5, had one double in 4, 2-run home runs versus the Orioles in Baltimore.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
I love
that's
his story,
right?
First of all. I mean, this guy was a, you know, alcoholic, substance abuse, stuff like that.
I was
thinking
the same thing. I wonder how he celebrated. But anyway.
Yeah, he came back, you know what I mean, won an MVP. Been in the last two World Series. I'm kind of upset. You know, I kind of feel bad for them that they haven't won one because that window closes up on you real fast. Trust me, I know. But Josh is getting it in. 4 home runs in one game? 5-for-5? Like, the question was going around, like, was this the greatest performance in baseball history? He's the 16th player in MLB history to hit 4 home runs in one game. Now, you know, my history doesn't go back far enough to really judge whether or not it was the greatest performance of all time, but I can go ahead and say that it was the greatest performance in my lifetime, maybe, because the last time it was done was about 9 years ago, and I think that was Carlos Delgado, but
yeah,
I don't think.
It definitely was. For me, the best performance is what I did on Bases Loaded on back on Genesis. Was like, big home runs.
Yo,
but I mean,
Yo, now, the other thing is, you know, down here they've been talking a lot about his contract and everything, and they're like, well, should we sign him? He had that mishap this off season. What should we do? But after that game, they're like,
straight cash, homie.
Like, they need to hurry up, and they're like, yo, all right, let's sign Josh now before he has more games like this, and then he can command one of those Jason Worth-type deals. Because right now, they're looking at Jason Worth, and they're like, hold up, is he better than Jason Worth? He should get more than Jason Worth, but the Rangers don't want to pay him Jason Worth money.
But well, Josh Hamilton, at this point, like you talk about Jason Worth, they're not even in the same stratosphere right now. Josh Hamilton's name will come up in any argument about the best player in baseball right now, you know. Like, over the last 2 or 3 years, you got Hamilton, you got Kemp over in L.A. You know, those are guys that you have to mention as potentially the best players in baseball. So I hope during his negotiations, Jason Worth's name doesn't come up, because if I was him, I'd just get up and walk out of the meeting for them disrespecting
me. Yeah,
like
and our chat room, Lee Gore, he's also from the area. He said that they need to sign Josh. I mean, he had 5 homers in a row. He said somebody's going to give him Pujols Fielder type money.
Yeah, I mean, that's too much. But.
Winning!
Yeah. Does anybody know how old Josh is?
Josh is, I'm not exactly sure, about
31.
Not 31,
but.
Because he was actually drafted.
They kind of said that they don't think anybody else is going to get a Pujols-type contract. They're looking at that contract as kind of a mistake. So, not even because of his production right now, but it's just crazy contract.
Yeah, I just hope that he can all jokes aside though. I hope that he can stay sober, stay healthy like when he gets paid, because we joke about his substance abuse, but he has it so bad. They did a special on him. I think it was on Real Sports, and it was talking about how dude is not allowed to even carry a wallet with his own credit card. Like, his wife has to manage everything because he's a true addict. Like, yo, he struggles hard. Like, dude will go short of the line, like, you know, right after a game if he could. It's to the point where they don't even keep champagne, like, in the locker room during the playoffs, because they don't want him to even get to taste the champagne.
And he is. He was born May 21st, 1981, so his birthday is actually coming up.
That's what they said, 31 this month. He'll be 31 this month.
Yeah, he's going to miss out on a War Room birthday shout-out, because his birthday is on a Monday, but...
I did a little research on homie, and he was drafted in 99. He's 6'4 and 240, and his ability, he's like what they call a 5-tool player. They were saying that, think about how good he is now, and imagine the fact that 8 years or seven to eight seasons of his prime, he was an addict, basically not productive. They said a dude would have been productive throughout his whole career, we'd be talking about him in the same sentence with, like, Babe Ruth.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because, you know, speaking of that, it's funny because I saw an interview with De La Hoya this week, and he said the same thing. He said that basically he was an addict the whole time that he was boxing. He said, yo, everything from coke to drinking. And he said he feels bad now because he only imagines how good he could have been if he was, like, you know, he was talking about how Floyd takes care of his body. He said that if he was able to take care of his body that way, with the talent that he had, he, like, feels bad now. Sounds to me like he wanted to come back and fight.
Take care of your body as far as not drinking and smoking, because that's all he could be talking about. Because I've been watching.
Well, that is what he's talking
seven.
About. Because
fast food, fried chicken, fries slathered in ketchup eating dude. But he does.
Yeah,
know,
but he was
no
talking
drugs,
about how
no
he's
drinking.
Never seen. The comment was saying, they were talking about the Floyd fight. This is why we're interviewing him, because, you know, he's a promoter. But he was saying how he's never seen Floyd, and he's known him for years, ever even take a drink at any kind of banquet or any kind of event. And he was saying that, yo, he gets soft, basically. Well, he used to get soft.
Yo,
so he got clean.
Yo, but hold up. Wasn't that email one of y'all sent about Floyd's and 50's baby moms, and one of Floyd's, I think, baby mom was saying she liked Floyd better when he's drunk or something?
Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah,
She said that sober, he's boring, he doesn't put it down. Well, if I can get him drunk, then I'll have
it.
No, the question, listen, the question,
so I guess
the question
theory
was,
shot out the window.
The question was, would you ever have sex with Floyd Mayweather again? And his baby mom said yes if he's drunk.
Yeah. I mean, so, she could be an angry.
I don't know, but you know, Oscar said what he said. He said he never saw Floyd drinking. I mean,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure they don't party together all the time. But
yeah, my point is, you think about that when it comes to these athletes in terms of bringing it back to Josh Hamilton, like how good he could have been. Or even guys like Charles Barkley, who, like, you know, didn't take care of his body and just went out and drank as much as he wanted to.
He didn't beat people up at the bar before he left.
Versus Carmelo. You see Barkley versus Carmelo in the contrast of how their careers went. You know, them one taking care of their body and one not.
And then you look at a guy think about that. But that's why substance abuse is a serious issue. Like, and I thought about that, bringing it back to Josh Hamilton again, because if he gets this kind of money for the access he'll have to, you know, some of these things that he's fighting, man.
He already got access, so we'll see.
Yeah, shout out to him, though.
The way he's playing, he wouldn't have to ever pay for a drink in Dallas anyway.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, no doubt. But anyway, let's move on to another story, man. Shout out to Josh Hamilton. That was a crazy, crazy performance. Let's talk about Cole Hamilton getting suspended for 5 games. He poked the net Bryce Harper, yo. What's your opinion on this story, Dev?
Man, this situation has gotten crazy, especially because I have access to the D.C. sports radio market, and, you know, everybody hates Cole Hamels now. You know, he's a fake tough guy and this and that. I don't think it had anything to do with being tough. And like a lot of baseball pundits, I don't disagree with what Hamill said about baseball tradition. My thing was, how stupid are you to admit it when given the chance to just say what all other pitchers say when they plunk somebody? Oh, the ball just got away from me. Like, why are you just going to go up there and say, you know, with how all sports right now are trying to preach the safety thing and protect their players, you're just going to go ahead and admit, yeah, I threw at him on purpose. That's the part that I didn't understand.
Hey, Dev, so basically what you're saying is Cole Hamill should have said,
just a bit outside.
Basically.
Yo, you want to hear something funny? You want to hear something real funny? While we were talking about Josh, he hit a home run.
Wow.
Dang.
And Chicago's up on Philly right now, 13-7, midway through the first quarter. But, it's gotten crazy, Jim, because, you know, Bryce Harper is the golden boy. And especially if you listen to D.C. radio, like, the media is kind of smelling themselves right now because, you know, the Nationals have never really been in first place before. So now that they're in first place for the first few weeks of a season and they beat the Phillies 2 out of 3 times, all the people down here already are saying, oh, we got ourselves a rivalry. Oh, come on.
But what?
Exactly. Like, the Phillies have pooped on the Nationals for as long as they've been in existence, and they win 2 games, and they're in first place, and now we have a rivalry. But that's kind of how this town works, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's quick to jump to judgment now. I tell everybody, holler at me in August when the playoff picture is starting to shape up, and we'll see if the Nationals are still even in the picture. I'm not even claiming right now that the Phillies will be in the picture because we're missing almost 200 RBI. Out of our lineup, and the Phillies right now absolutely stink to me. But I gotta
address something now. Jimmy, you say Miami fans are the worst. Listen, DC fans are the most unrealistic, ignorant, unknowledgeable fans on the planet. And I'm gonna give you another example. Outside of them celebrating,
alienate our whole DC fan base. But go ahead.
Outside of them celebrating the Nationals as about to go to the World Series because of Bryce Harper, yo, RG3 got drafted, and they're running around here talking about the Super Bowl.
Hold on, though. I mean, I agree that, you know, some issues with DC fans, they're not worse than Miami because at least if a team is doing good, DC jumps behind them.
Miami doesn't have fans. That's the difference.
Miami don't even care whether the team is good or not. Like, you don't support their teams at all. Like, one of the big things about the Big Three team of Miami is that Miami doesn't even deserve to have those three players. Like,
no.
It's ridiculous for those three.
You know what, though? Even with those three players, they didn't, like, they've had games that weren't sellouts. Like, how do you have three of the top 15 players in the league and you don't sell out?
Could you imagine if LeBron, Wade, and Bosh played for the Wizards?
Yeah.
they be talking about NBA finals like during the preseason.
No, they be building a new stadium.
Yeah.
No, but
that,
I get what both of y'all saying. Like, Miami doesn't really have fans, and the fans that have come in contact in D.C., they're just extra homers. You know what I'm saying? They're very diehard. They're very loyal because I don't know another fan base who will just keep getting it stuck to them like they do with the Redskins and their owner. Like, year after year, they have some of the highest ticket prices, some of the highest concession prices, some of the highest parking prices in the NFL. And the product on the field absolutely stinks, but they keep coming back. So they're definitely loyal. They're loyal to a fault. But, you know, it does get a little unrealistic at times. And they're just giddy about the Nats being in first place 5 weeks into the season.
Well, let's shift gears and talk some basketball real quick.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about one of our guys coming up that we all watch play, which is Patrick Ewing. He's going to interview for the Bobcats job. So my question to you is, will he make a good head coach, and should he even want this job to begin with?
See, I don't really know the answer to that because it's difficult for an assistant to stand out. But when an assistant, you know, when an assistant does stand out, you just hear his name a lot. Like, you heard Tom Thibodeau a lot because, you know, he was responsible for the defense that they played in Boston. Like, I don't hear anything associated with Patrick Ewing's name. I mean, he's been down there working with Dwight for how many years? And Dwight Howard still doesn't have much of an offensive game, so I don't know. But as far as does he want, you know, should he want the job? Hell yeah, you should want the job. If you're trying to get a head coaching job, you got to start somewhere. You know, as much as we clown the Bobcats, if I got offered the job, I'm taking it. What did Mark Jackson do to get his job?
I ain't trying to be funny, but to your point, Dez, yo, he worked with Patrick Ewing, Dwight Howard, that is, worked with Patrick Ewing for months, if not seasons. Yo, he worked with Hakeem for about 2 weeks, and we saw a tremendous difference in his offensive capabilities.
Yeah, we also saw Hakeem give Ewing fits for years. I mean, Hakeem is arguably one of the top 5 or 10 players to ever play. So, you know, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. But in terms of the job, I agree he should take the job because, you know, how else would he get the experience as a head coach? And it seems like once you become a head coach, and this includes the NFL, baseball, basketball, once you become a head coach, it's like you're just part of the rotation now where they keep switching you around anyway. So he wants to get into that rotation. He should take the job. I mean, it's funny to see him work for Mike. That's hilarious to me.
Hasn't Mike stuck it to him enough?
Yeah, it wasn't worse than when Pippen dunked on him. Yeah, that was one of the nastiest dunks I've ever seen in my life. How Pippen going to dunk on Ewing and then push him to the ground?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, Sixers tied the game up at 13.
Doc, do you think you should take that job?
They can't guard Hawks.
You know, the crazy thing is, there's been, like, this thing where centers don't get jobs. Like, it's like you got to be under, like, 6'8". Even, like, Paul Silas, I think he's, like, 6'8". So they don't really get, and even Phil Jackson, so... I mean, I think he should get the good job. I mean, he's paid his dues. He's been an assistant forever. So, I mean, shoot, he should get – he has more credibility than Vinny Del Negro. Vinny Del Negro came from, like, nothing.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying he should get the job because I don't know his qualifications. But if offered, hell yeah, you take the job. It doesn't matter what team it is. You got to start somewhere. But
Mike don't know what he's doing anyway, man. Mike going to hire, like – he's going to hire World Be Free to coach that team or something.
And like
World
I said, like – Mark Jackson didn't have to do anything. People were saying Mark Jackson was getting snubbed for head coaching positions when he hadn't even coached anywhere.
Yeah, that's what's so gangsta about it. They based that on his analysis, like covering the game.
Yo, you notice that, though? You notice that Mark Jackson would give his analysis as if he was a coach. Like, he was, like, almost like he was interviewing, trying to sound as articulate as he should.
And he probably did that on purpose.
Yo, Let's talk about another ex-player. This is an ex-NFL player. Let's talk about Chris Carter admitting that he
played. I put that money on his head. Put some money on his head.
I can't even get the statement out. Chris Carter admitted that he put bounties on players' heads while playing in the NFL. Now, he's keeping it real, but at the same time, is this something that he should do considering everything that's going on?
I mean, in a politically correct world, that's probably something you just go ahead and keep to yourself. Like, why at this point? It's basically just because he's figuring, like, look, I don't play. I can't get in trouble, so I can say what I want.
Hold up.
What's his name? Roger Goodell is going to, like, retroactively sign Chris Carter and take some of his checks.
Well, he's already having trouble getting into the Hall of Fame, so Thor might just make sure.
Yeah,
how about
that? Maybe that's probably why he said it. Man,
Thor might just go ahead and make sure that.
That one Mello one that stopped snitching DVD, I put some money on his head. He was talking my cats on the street, though. That's a whole different meaning.
But Chris Carter said that he put bounties on guys that tried to take him out. He said he wasn't really putting bounties on guys for them to actually get hurt, but just for protection. Like, he'd pay a big guy, you know, to keep one of these dudes off of him that he thought was gunning for him. That was
his clarification.
Well,
we don't believe you. You need more people.
Exactly. That was his clarification, because, you know, in today's day and age in sports, if you say something, you definitely got to go back the next day and either retract or clarify. So that was his clarification. It was for protection.
What I said was...
He had human condoms.
What I said was, I got misquoted when I spoke. Anyway, man, tell everybody how to get in touch with us, yo.
All right, y'all can, of course, like you know, you can get in touch with us by checking out our website at warroomsports.com. If you want to call in and speak to us about any of our topics tonight, dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, press 1 if you want to talk, and we will try our damnedest to get to you. But right now, since we got our Sixers on and the Bulls on this monitor, we're going to go ahead and talk about a little bit of basketball, some NBA playoffs. Now, the first team to bail out of the playoffs was the defending world champion, Dallas Mavericks. So, you know, watching the games in this series, how do you think that it happened? Like, Akil, like, you know, you're down there at the pulse of everything. Why did they go out so easily? Because I do remember, like, last week, you thought this series might end up going 7. And I don't know if I thought 7, but I didn't totally disagree with you. But what happened after the last time we talked?
I mean, I don't know, man. It seems like even that last game they had game 5, but they just gave it up. It just seemed like the Oklahoma City Thunder, they took that loss really hard last year. So they're probably like, yo, we need to put our foot on their necks no matter how hard they come at us. We need to come at them harder because even though the Mavericks won the chip last year, remember, Oklahoma City was up in like 2 of those games. They easily could have won that series last year. So I think just Oklahoma City's will just overpowered them.
Listen, man, I think that in the words of Keith Sweat, man, they may be young, but they're ready. They're ready to compete for a chip. And the boy, the biggest beer in the business, like he gave him fits coming off the bench. Yo, he gave him fits coming off the bench, yo. And the crazy thing about like that is, watch he gets a max deal somewhere and ends up leaving that team. But that's a whole other issue. But anyway,
But you know what?
Series,
it'll be one of them situations where he get a max deal, and then he starts and he's supposed to be the man, and he might not live up to that. People need to leave people's roles alone. Let that man be the greatest sixth man in the game.
You're going to become Eddie Jones. You're going to become Eddie Jones on the max deal. All right.
What's crazy is, like, first off, that's not the same Dallas team as last year. They lost all their toughness. With Tyson Chandler being gone and DeShawn Stevenson being gone, they changed the makeup of their team.
They lost their tough juice because Garon left, too, even though he didn't play in the playoffs.
Carter plays well for, like, 5 minutes out of an entire game.
I
know this is your man and all. I know you think he's the second greatest point guard ever, but yo, he's not a starter in his league no more.
You don't even have to throw the disclaimer on that. Jason Kidd is old and he used to hang his hat, I mean, besides on, you know, the triple doubles, he used to hang his hat on defense. He can't stay in front of the Russell Westbrooks of the world and cats like that no more.
They want a chip. When they want a chip, he should have said, "I'm out. We want a chip. I'm out.
That's what I thought at that time, too. Remember I told you I thought he should have just went out on top, like, yo, this is what I strive for. I finally got it. Time to
no
go.
Doubt.
He's a basketball junkie.
The boy Austin Haight actually played well in the series and had me dying because it's funny how watching Derek Fisher come off the bench, he's a more productive player. I'm like, that's what you should have been doing. Like, you're not a starter in this league. But come off the bench, he actually played well.
Coming off the bench, he has less expectations, so anything that he does positive – you know, it's looking that way.
Yeah, it's magnified. I wouldn't say he had a good series.
No, he had a good series, man. If you watch those games, he had a good series. He scored like double figures in almost every game.
Yeah,
no,
like deep, down inside, too.
Deep down inside, you acknowledge the fact that he's a bum, but you also have sentimental nostalgia, and you be protecting
that
dude.
Oh, no,
that
no, no. Against that shot against the Spurs, I refuse to slander him but just because of the shot he made on the Spurs. But with that being said, I would just bring that up because...
I'll take all four guards from the war room over Derek Fisher, man. Come on, man.
No, no, but what I'm saying is this, though. I'm not saying Derek Fisher's a great player, but him coming off the bench makes their bench stronger because... Yo, when you watch their bench come in between him and the biggest beard in the business, they were like, he played very well. And, I mean, regardless of everything else, I mean.
What did he do very well, Jimmy?
He scored and put up dimes. He scored on more of the bench than most of the Mavericks bench players. What are you talking about? He scored double figures the whole series. Did you watch the game?
What do y'all think about, like,
Fisher
moving forward?
Big shot.
Do you think
Fisher has a good shot.
If Kendrick Perkins can't play, do y'all think that's going to hurt the Thunder's chances going forward?
No.
I know how I feel about Kendrick Perkins. I think he's really overrated. I think he's really overrated as a player, but I'm not going to sit here and say if he can't play, his presence isn't going to be, you know, it's going to be noticed.
I think he's overrated as a human being. And I agree with you. He's a plump.
Yeah, but I do think that he still has a – he plays a part.
He plays a part that they
body.
Real
miss. He doesn't have enough big bodies in his league.
Because Ibaka is definitely a great defender, but he's still – you know, he's not as tough as Kendrick Perkins' ex. So
– Hey, question.
You need KP in there acting tough. That's a part of what they do.
Question, who'd you rather have? Varejao or Kendrick Perkins? Who's better, Varejao or Kendrick Perkins?
Varejao. Come on, man. You don't want to go down on the block with Varejao defense?
Yo, I can't even answer that.
And by the way, Austin, as we talking, I'm sitting here looking at the box scores from their series. Yo, man, dude was averaging like 10, like, 10-3 and like 2, like, off the bench.
I think playing with the Thunder is actually more conducive to him contributing than playing with the Lakers because they have, you know, they might have more weapons where you can't really pay attention to Fisher when he comes on. So if nobody's paying him attention and he's hitting that open J, I don't know. It's cookies. Because if he gets in the game ever when there's like a Durant, Harden and a Westbrook in the game at the same time. There's nobody checking for Derek Fisher.
You say, ooh, but I'm talking about off the bench. And then if you look at the plus
and
minus,
during this series,
here's a stat for you. During this series with Fisher in the game, the Thunder are plus 21. Now, with Durant in the game, they're plus 4.
Sixers got to get it any way we can. Iggy just bowled Dang in the nose. Trying to put their whole squad out.
That's how you do it. Body bag season.
It has been a body bag season.
Fisher getting too much
airplay,
I do know that. So let's move on to the next series. The next team to go out. We don't have to go too long on this one because this was expected. The next team to go out was the scrappy Utah Jazz. Now, they got swept in 4. They're a good team, but they just went up against a team that they couldn't contend with.
That's the crazy part. I'm like, I've never seen a team lose, and I'm impressed with them getting swept.
We talked about on Hoop Girls Radio on Tuesday night, the Spurs, you know, they have this thing where everybody thinks they're such an old team. But besides that nucleus of Duncan, Manu, Steven Jackson, and just a 30-year-old Tony Parker, the rest of that team is pretty young. I mean, you got Gary Neal as being one of the elder statesmen at like 28, but then you got DeJuan Blair, whose minutes have gone down, Tiago Splitter, Kawhi Leonard, you know, all those kind of cats. So they had the young horses to go along with what Duncan and Parker and Manu is going to give you. So I think the team has a really good mix right now.
They definitely do. Assuming the Clippers win their series, and I don't know right now whether that's going to happen, I would love to see Chris Paul and Tony Parker go at it.
then.
Yeah,
that'll be a pretty good matchup.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Tony Parker's still one of the fastest dudes in the league from end to end.
Utah had a success just by making the playoffs. I mean, who thought
they
were going
to
make the playoffs this year?
That's true. They had to come
their guard play was atrocious.
Yeah.
Everything they had.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Devin Harris still does his thing a little bit, but
Devin Harris is
behind
the best point guard this league.
Yeah, but behind him is like
Jamal.
Yeah, I'm throwing him in that mix too, Dev. He's a backup.
Who, Devin Harris?
Cool.
Yeah, he's a backup. Ludacris is a backup.
I think he's borderline. I think he could go either way.
I think he's a starter. He's a starter on a great team.
He's a starter, not a star. These days, at point guards, you need a star. They thought
he's
was going
backup.
To be a star.
In this league, the way it's currently constructed, he's a backup.
Yeah. But you know what, though? Like you said, just for them making the playoffs, we kind of got to give them props because Utah, you know, free agents aren't really trying to go there. So the way that they have to build their team through the draft, you know, trades and stuff like that, it's commendable, and it's been like that even when they, you know, when they were balling all these years when they had I'm not forgetting his name, but the coach.
Jerry Sloan.
Yeah, all the years that Sloan was there, you know, they just weren't that attractive place that people wanted to go play, so they had to do their thing, and they remained competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my man Todd Clemens, a.k.a. Black Blue, he got them playing well. He's so black, he looks blue. My man Black Blue did a hell of a job this year, man.
All right, so the next team to catch the to go fishing was the Magic. They were bounced in 5 games by the Indiana Pacers. Now, you know, of course, they went in with a distinct disadvantage because Dwight Howard didn't play, you know, when they stole game 1. I don't know if anybody here was, you know, starting to change their opinion of, well, maybe they can do something in the series, because I sure didn't. I think it is what it is. I think they stole game 1. But there were certain games where they didn't roll over easily. They just were overmatched.
Jameer,
Big Baby, did his thing in a couple of those games.
That's a reflection of their point guard.
Big Baby was balling, too. Big Baby gave it all. I felt bad for him because he was going up so strong, but he was playing center at one point. And Roy Hitter was just pointing back in his face like, yo, you're too small.
Yeah, like Big Baby, like in game 4, tried to refuse to let them lose, but, you know, you're still Big Baby at the end of things. I think in game 4 they kind of got shafted on that call with 2 seconds left.
He said, I'm going to do like KG taught me, man.
KG was daddy. But, yeah, it's not really much to say about that series. I mean, the Indiana Pacers, though, you know, surprising as they are, I don't think there was anybody in America who didn't pick them to win that series and win it pretty easily. And that's what they did.
Yeah, they're very athletic.
Yeah, so if we get to it, you know, before the show's over, we'll talk a little bit more about the Pacers going into this series.
After Stan Van Gundy loses his job, I think he should go on a broadcasting booth with his brother and become a part of their team. That would be some hilarious TV.
It probably would. I don't think he's a bad coach, though, but it is inevitable that he's going to lose this job.
Yeah, but, he's actually kind of funny. Like, we watch him interviews, and he's kind of funny. So him and his brother together probably would be some funny TV, yo.
Yeah. All right, so the New York Knicks, who are back. They are back at home after 5 games with the Knicks. Now, did y'all realize? Now, this is one thing. Like, you know, I don't want to, you know, I ain't trying to diss nobody, but, you know, we got a lot of New York people that we talk to, you know, even in the industry, outside of the industry. And there's always this confidence about the Knicks, and I never really understood it. Except for the fact that New Yorkers are confident about everything that happens in New York. But, you know, when they won the one game that they won in this series, this was the first playoff game that the Knicks had won in 11 years.
11 seasons.
Like, yeah, so where does all the confidence?
That's worse than my Cowboys.
Come?
That's worse than my Cowboys.
I'm gonna say that's definitely worse than the Cowboys.
The Knicks are a storied dynastic franchise.
And Kill, it's worse than the Cowboys. Even if the Cowboys had, you know, more years of playoff utility, yeah. Remember, in basketball they play series. Like, you can't win one game in a damn series in 11 years.
So
I can see if it was a one and done thing, you lose game one and you're out. But in series, you like.
Yo, New York is the most overrated team in professional sports. The Garden is overrated. It's a dump. And I'm tired of calling it the Mecca of basketball. It ain't no Mecca of basketball. It's a dump.
We're going to get in trouble.
Stuck like rhinoceros pizzle. Because
but
the Knicks
even
franchise,
with the Mecca thing, I think the whole Mecca thing is about the players who've gone through there and played. But
man, those same players went through the spectrum, man.
They all played everywhere.
Exactly, they all played the Garden, the Spectrum.
Just to actually get to that game or that series rather,
uh-huh.
I think that the Knicks have potential to be. A tough opponent in the East, but I think they need to gel themselves, and I think it's going to take like two seasons. And we all know that Woodson's not getting two seasons.
You know, Thad Young just got
right
banged on by Hasik real bad.
Another thing. I remember I was listening back to the last show before this show, and one of you mentioned how in one game Melo took 26 shots and Dwight Howard took 9. I mean, they need to divide that up and make it
Amari.
Amari took 9. They need to divide that up and go about, you know, 17 and 17. Now,
but with that, it wasn't that Melo was taking shots away from Amari, because Amari could have been taking shots that he was letting those other bums shoot.
Yo,
he has
to
be more aggressive.
That's
even
the thing I think, like, yo, in so many of them possessions, they were, like, there was no movement. They were standing still, and they were giving Melo the ball, like, bail us out.
Yeah, so, what is Melo supposed to do? If they keep giving him the rock
movement
in those situations, is he supposed to say, no, I don't want to shoot it because I don't want to, you know, I don't want my shot count to go up? Y'all don't want to shoot. Melo's going
to
shoot.
Their offense is anemic. To have that many offensive weapons, yo, they don't move the ball. They don't cut. And it gets late in the shot clock, and then they just give Melo the ball here, bail us out.
But
Austin,
they have a Melo offense. That's the kind of offense Carmelo wants to be in, a stagnant offense. But, I mean, his shot attempts can go down just not by his own account, just by changing the offense. If you have this kind of talent, play the game a little differently. I mean, that little
stretch they
should
run more pick and
roll. Yeah, that little stretch that they played pick and roll with Jeremy Lin and Amari Stoudemire, they were successful. Why go away from that? You know, Melo is going to fit in. He's going to find a way to fit in and get his shots, no matter what you run. But you don't have to make the whole offense stagnant just to give him the ball. But I don't put it on him. A lot of people put it on him. Like,
real quick, Deb, what they should do, you know how the Celtics used to do it? They used to, how Bird used to, him and Mikhail would do the pick and roll. So Melo can be Bird, Amari could be Mikhail, and they could just get it in like that.
Right.
Here's
because
the
both
problem.
Of them can shoot.
One
they can
problem.
Pick
one
and roll,
problem.
Pick
one problem with that whole thing. They're not Bird and Mikhail. Amari doesn't give effort a lot of times, and that's what drives me crazy, because you see that when Amari gives effort, he's in, like, you know, a good player. I won't call him a great player, but he's up there. But a lot of games you watch him, he's not giving the full effort. And sometimes it looks like, you really can't judge it by watching on TV, but it looks like he don't care sometimes. That's why
I would call Amari at his best a great player, except for, you know, the deficiencies that we always point out, defense, and he could be a much better rebounder for all the talent he has. But
yeah, that's why I won't call him. I won't call him a great player, because nobody with that athleticism should average, like, under 8 boards. Amari averages, like, 4 boards per game for a career. That's, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, like, 7. He averages, like, 7 rebounds. And
that's still
ridiculous.
Jimmy just he just undershot the joint, like,
yo,
he
like,
came
yo,
up
Kyle Lowry.
I know whatever it is.
Kyle Lowry's a better rebounder than him.
He should be a 20-10 guy, seriously.
Yeah,
no, you're right. You're absolutely. Yo, and the other thing with that kill is if you run that pick-and-roll set with Amari and Melo, you've got to have a strong point guard who can shoot
and defend. Neither Lynn or B. Diddy are really shooters. The only shooter that you could count on to not be a knockdown shooter would be Bibby, and you give up too much athletically by starting Bibby. So they're in a quandary.
Yeah. J.R. Smith, I guess.
The Knicks get the same St. Mario the Sixers get from, like, Elton Brand. Yo, I'm being serious. When you watch them play, the Sixers get the same thing from Elton Brand the Knicks get from Amari, you know. And he's overpaid as well. But still, it's like, yo, Amari is so frustrating because he should be, like, such a better player than what he is. And it's like, you know, I understand that Melo gets a lot of the blame when this happens. But, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. That's what he asked for.
Elton Brand don't give you nothing. See, I guess it's the reverse, because Elton Brand will defend and try to rebound.
Elton Brand will defend the center. He gives you effort. He's just old as hell.
Yo, Jimmy giving out A's for effort. Elton Brand is a plum.
Yo, listen, though, man.
Speaking of Stoudemire, the Knicks, I'm sorry, the Heat, they had to apologize to Amari Stoudemire because when he fouled out of the game yesterday, their arena announcer referred to Stoudemire as having been extinguished from the game. Like that's, he said this over the loudspeaker. So they actually released a statement to apologize to Amari Stoudemire for that. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of a low blow right there.
Yo, being politically correct, that was funny. Oh,
I mean, it was definitely funny. Now, I don't really think it's politically correct because it's not like dude did it. I can see the organization doing that because they didn't know he was going to do that. Or maybe they didn't write paid him. Yo, we give you $50,000 if he ever fouled out, if he says he was extinguished from the game. And then we'll take the heat for you, but I don't know. That probably was funny, but I'm pretty sure Amari didn't really find it funny when he heard that. I mean, you're getting fouled out. It's inevitable that in a few minutes you're going to lose this series, and dude want to make fun of you. And he's a nobody sitting at the table. I'd be a little upset about that, but hey.
Now, question: Do you think they would have won Game 3 had Amari played? You think they would have won Game 3?
No.
I don't
too
think they can beat the Heat.
Yeah.
I didn't think they could win a game, but, you know.
Yeah, they were outmatched. I mean, the bottom line is they were outmatched. And it's funny because the Heat, when their bench plays well, it's like they're going to be a tough out, but they're knocking down that outside shot because their bench guys get so many open looks. It's funny to see. Like, and, of course, when you're playing with D-Wade, LeBron, and even Bosh at times, like, the amount of open looks that Mike Miller gets, it's crazy.
He should be the last guy that should leave an open for open looks.
Yeah, but it's like, yo, what are you going to do, though? What are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like, they got LeBron and Wade coming at you. And sometimes Bosh.
And sometimes Bosh.
Yeah.
Bosh is the best shooter out of them three.
I was about to say, he is the best shooter.
It's true, but he's like the letter Y, man. And sometimes Bosh. I mean, sometimes Bosh.
I'm looking at this. Amari Stoudemire, he averages 8.8 boards for his career, but he's never averaged 10 boards. His high is like,
how is that possible? How is it possible for him to be a rookie when he jumped through the building to not average 10 boards?
But he averaged 21.6 points for his career. But anyway, that's enough about, you know, them being back. We'll be spending too much time.
The Knicks are back.
Yeah.
The
All right, now, we got some series going on now where, you know, there's three teams tonight trying to close out and one team trying to close out tomorrow. One is going on right now, the Sixers and the Bulls. Now, you know, Kill being a Bulls fan and the rest of us being Sixers fans here, the score with 8:28 left to go in the second quarter is 32-30 Chicago, but Dang is sitting on the bench holding his nose. I think they just butterfly stitched it up. Do you guys think the Sixers can close this out tonight?
The Sixers
are back. Do you think your Bulls are, you know, you think
they're
going to...
Yo, Dev, I just got to bring attention to this. The Sixers scored 26 points in the first half of the last game.
Well, the Bulls scored 35. I mean, 26 is pitiful, but 35 is not that much better. But
I mean, these are two teams that play some hellified defense. In Chicago, without Rose, they play some of the best defense that I've seen. Like, I'm not saying that because they shut the Sixers down in a half, because the Sixers can do that on their own from time to time. But it's very difficult to score on this team, man. They swarm. They rarely miss assignments. And when they do, it's very glaring. You notice it because you're not used to them missing assignments. But the Bulls are a hell of a defensive team. So, you know, I'm not really that embarrassed about a 26-point half against this team.
Yo, I kind of, you know, as a Bulls fan, as soon as I heard Derrick Rose was hurt, it was just kind of like, okay, how soon are the Sixers going to put us out of our misery? I'm surprised we won the last game. So, I mean, I know we're playing
with
a lot of
fire. You're one of the only ones, though, Kill, because I heard a lot of people saying, it don't matter, they're going to kill the Sixers. It's not over yet. If they force a game 7, then the Sixers are definitely going to be the ones with the pressure. And I don't know. We'll see. Because you got Noah, he's in uniform tonight. I'm not sure if he's played yet because I haven't been able to pay great attention to it. But he was supposed to be a game-time decision.
Yeah, then Gibson has his little injury. So it's just kind of like, it's crazy. I mean, and outside
so
of game,
Rose,
outside of,
you got two ankles. Yeah. You got now a nose that just got bowed. Like, Dang might be afraid to go back into the lane for the rest of the game. You never know.
It's crazy.
Yeah, man. It's unfortunate. This season has been, like, brutal for the Bulls. But I guess with all the injuries going around, it's just crazy in general. You see Kobe may not play tonight. He's a game-time decision.
Yeah, and then what's his name?
Stop bombing.
Karan Butler. What did Karan Butler, like, broke his hand, right?
They
said he was out for the series. And then, you know, he's been back and playing pretty well. So, yeah, just as a Sixers fan, my whole thing is, of course, you know, I hope that they move on. I don't know that the Sixers advancing in the playoffs this year is the best thing for the franchise, but you never want your team to lose, you know, because you don't want – you kind of don't want management to get complacent thinking, well, we made it this far, you know, we don't need to make that many moves. We just grow with this nucleus. You have to make some kind of moves. You have to make some decisions on this team because they barely made it.
We really need some help. I think that because this is a new management team, though, we got to give them a chance to show and prove. Because I understand exactly what you're saying. Under the old management, they would have like had a parade for them going to the second round if that happened. You know what I'm saying? So let's just hope the new management, like, you know.
And you have to keep things in perspective too. You know, the reigning MVP of the league gets hurt in game one. You know, Noah gets hurt in the next game. You know, Gibson's getting hurt. Now, we all know injury is a part of sports. At the same time, the Sixers still have to go out there and play. So, you know, just because those guys got hurt, the games aren't just, you know, they didn't stop the game and say forfeit the Sixers win. They still had to go out there and play and win the games. But you still have to keep it in perspective that, you know, the Bulls aren't playing with a full deck, and this is a team that was supposed to compete for an NBA title. So,
yo, it's like everything is lining up right for the Heat, yo.
Oh, they could, they gonna.
It's just
they
shit.
Might.
It's like, yo, they might not get tested to the finals.
That's crazy, because I really don't think, because we might not get to that. I really don't think Indiana is ready. I think Indiana's a good team, an up and coming team, but I don't think they're ready to threaten Miami.
Yo,
they may win.
West,
they may take it to
West
six.
The West is tough.
But I don't think they're gonna threaten.
1 through 8.
All right, so, Jim, what do y'all think about the Celtics at the top of the hour in 7 minutes? They're going to try to close out Atlanta, but this is a question I have to you guys. Al Horford is back. How do you think that affects this series? How big of a change does that, you know, make for things?
I mean, he played okay last game. He did bring something to the table. But they're playing Boston tonight, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah. No, yeah, because Atlanta had home court.
Last time they were in Boston, they got feces beat down their legs.
But I do think he changes the series dramatically because they really didn't have viable big men to throw out there. You bring back Al Horford, he may not be 100%, but, I mean, he changes some things up. Like Kevin Garnett is going to – I mean, he plays hard all the time, but Kevin Garnett's going to have to, you know, play a little bit harder.
They had that board, a guy, the foreign guy that was got kicked out of the other league. What was his name?
Yeah, who was undersized.
Yeah. So you're right about that. He does bring, like, that's the one thing.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was saying that's the one thing. Like, even when we went back to talking about Perkins, like, in the playoffs, man, size does matter, Paul said.
Yeah.
But
they need big
does.
Bodies out there. So, you
I
know,
think
I mean, and Horford is not just a big body. The dude is very skilled. So if he can come back and do his thing, man, this might change the complexion of this series. Go ahead, Austin.
I think he's highly skilled. I think he's a very good player. But having not played since January, his effort and the results were admirable last game. I just don't think he can provide that consistently or enough of it for them to beat the Celtics. And I don't know what's up with Paul Pierce, but, yo, always tell the truth. That man done got the time machine or something.
Well, he has a strained MCL, so his knee is bothering him a little bit tonight.
Mm.
He's going to play.
When
he's
is Rondo
going to
get a jump shot? Because I swear, if Rondo had a jump shot, he might be the best player in the whole league.
Yeah, at this point, it's very inconsistent because sometimes he hits it, and then he goes back to being Rayon Rondo.
How do you get to be like an elite player, one of the top three at your position in the world, and you can't shoot, which is like
because
core of the game.
Sure.
Like, how is that possible?
See, because he's one of those players, he makes sure he does everything else. He doesn't do a little bit of everything. He does a lot of everything.
What's your name supposed to be working with him? Mark Price in the summertime. Like, I don't get it.
It ain't working.
He owes a refund.
But you know what, though? We talked about it at the beginning of the season, he was hitting his J. So you know what it probably is. Yeah. You work with these guys over the summer, and whatever they did to tweak your technique, you're doing it for the first few weeks of the season, and then
you go back to the old habits, the bad mechanics.
And now, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of like Evan Turner. Like, when he came back from working with
the old Philly coach.
When he worked with Herb McGee, you know, he came back and it looked, even though the shot wasn't falling consistently, at least his shot looked better. But now it seems like he's going back to that same sweeping motion, bad mechanic jump shot that he was shooting before. So
they need to come with the whole Sean Marion theory, man. This is what makes it comfortable. Let him stay with that.
Yeah, but at least Sean Marion is ugly, but he make that joint. These dudes don't make their ugly
shot. In history, yo, Dr. James Naismith was like, yo, since Dr. James Naismith invented this game, there hasn't been an uglier form than Sean Marion by far.
You got your man at the line. The old center from the Chicago Bulls.
Evan Turner Cartwright.
Yeah, Bill Cartwright at the line was crazy.
Yeah, that was kind of ugly.
Later on tonight, the Lakers are going to try to close out Denver. Denver is raving about all this bulletin board material that the Lakers have been giving them. You know, you had Andrew Bynum's comments before the last game saying that closeout games are easier. Then you had today something leaked saying that on the Lakers whiteboard, it told their players to pack for three games, basically this game and two games in Oklahoma City. So Denver's using that as bulletin board material. When I think, okay, that's just, like Wilbon said earlier today, that's just smart logistics. If you happen to win, you got to play two more games, so pack for three games so you don't have to run out of draws. Like, but they're trying to use anything they can as motivation.
Yeah, if this is my little competition, like, come on, man, cut it out. But, I mean, I ain't going to front. The one thing I got to say about that series is the longer it goes on, the better chance they have of Ron Artest being back for OKC.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Meta World.
Oh, we are out of time. So real quick, fellas, just answer the question. Answer all at once. We don't have time to go around. Do the Lakers close out tonight? Do the Clippers close out tomorrow? Yeah.
Clippers, no. Lakers, yes.
All right.
Clippers, no. Lakers, yes.
We out of here for the night. Jimmy, do
yes, sir. Thanks for joining us in the war room this evening, good people. Shout out to everyone who chatted in the chat room. Everybody from Facebook, Twitter, people that, you know, hit us up all over social media sites because we're all over the place.
Special shout out to Ty Barnett for joining us, and good luck with him on his bout Saturday at the D.C. Convention Center. If you're in D.C., get down to the Stadium Club right now. His website launch party is still going on. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to hear the general speak on everything happening in the world of sport. Have a great weekend. And last but not least, rest in peace to the homie MCA from the Beastie Boys.
Yes, yes.
Until next week, holla at us.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about three bad brothers you know so well. It started way back in history with that rock
MCA
and me.
My team.
Been had a little horsey named Paul Revere. Just me and my horsey and a quart of beer. Riding across the land, kicking up sand. Sheriff's license on my tail, cause I'm in demand. One lonely BCIP. All by myself without nobody. The sun is beating down on my baseball hat. The air is getting hot, the beer is getting flat. Looking for a girl, I ran into a guy. His name is MCA. I said, howdy, he said, hi.
We stepped into the windy, had a gun, and had a grin. You think the story's over, but it's ready to begin.